Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
A Listener Production.
The creators of this podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which it is recorded. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are the first storytellers of this land. We pay respect to their elders, past, present, and emerging, as well as any Indigenous people who may be listening today.
We are two guys, one cup.
It is Monday, April the 1st, April Fool's Day. Fool you listening to this football podcast, this football adjacent podcast, expecting, anyway, I've gone too early. Yeah. I fooled myself at the start of this introduction.
And you did do our new tag for the opening. You didn't say everyone relax.
That was my fool. That was April fool that I was doing though.
Yeah, except you fooled, but we're the fools because we're trying to get this new branding going and you've completely messed it up at the start.
It's a good point, but the AFL does, of course, as everyone knows, stands for the April Fool's League. And so, of course, anyway, everyone relax. This is Two Guys, One Cup, an AFL adjacent podcast. My name is Will Anderson.
And my name is Charlie Clawson. And we're recording during the Easter Monday match between the Hawks and the Cats. 3/4 time, and they've just called a pause in play. Now, Will, you're on the ground in Melbourne, so let me cut down to the boundary line. What can you tell us, Will?
I mean, I showed Charlie before we started recording, but I'm literally the window I'm looking out from the Airbnb I'm staying in for the Melbourne Comedy Festival is looking directly at where the MCG is. So I can give live weather updates. I don't know necessarily, I can't see any signs of lightning that would mean that they need to pause the game at the moment. In fact, it feels like the rain has stopped where I am. So I reckon they should get out there and just finish off the game.
Well, I mean, when did this weather rule come in? Because I feel like growing up watching footy, especially out at Waverley, like I sat through some horrendous conditions and there was never any talk of like, oh, maybe someone's going to get hit by lightning or hailstones the size of bricks. It's like, just play through it. When did this kind of like, it's gone soft, Will. The bloody footy's gotten soft. Everything's gone woke.
I want them to cross to the lab and get some science around what are the statistical likelihoods that if there were to be a lightning strike, is it more likely to strike in the middle of a field and one of the players? Or is it more likely to like strike someone who's in the top stands of the MCG? Like, surely the lightning's more likely to. I mean, they're not evacuating the crowd. The crowd is still there, right?
Yeah. So everyone get to the top of the light towers. Those tall metal light towers.
Grab a coat hanger and get to light tower number 3. Protect your players at all costs. Like,
we're going to hand out kites and keys and get to the top of the light towers.
It's a stormy day. Why is the Geelong cheer squad handing out kites? No reason. Just take your kite and get up to your section.
I mean, if Port Adelaide were playing today and there was a lightning strike, like tragic, of course, like one of their players gets hit by lightning, but also like great marketing.
Get superpowers, maybe.
if Marvel movies have taught us anything, it's a horrendous accident can actually make you a superhero.
What if, like, there's a lightning storm and Ken Hinckley gets struck by lightning and turns into the Incredible Hink? Like,
half man, half electricity. Imagine his press conferences, though, like after that. Like, you'd know when he was bristling from a question because you just hear the crackling of electricity, like, building from underneath the desk.
But, I mean, also he could, like, zap journalists and shit at the press conferences.
Well, I want to talk, Will, before we get into the action from the weekend. about umpiring. And, you know, we're big supporters of umpiring, but there is, seems like this year, a lot of indecision, especially with the score review. We're seeing more score reviews than ever. Now, I just want to know, do you think that it could have anything to do with the constant criticism in both the public and the media, and figures like Grant Thomas, who seemed to have a vendetta against the umpires, and death threats being sent by the umpires from people on social media? Do you think that in any way it could have affected the umpires' confidence in making decision?
We always get what we don't think that we're going to get, right? Like, we think that we can get these imperfections. I mean, this is the hill that I'm going to die on when it comes to AFL, which is accept the imperfections of the game. The more that we try to come up with rules to solve the imperfections, the more we just go further. We're like conspiracy theory people. We're like, we've got to find the truth. We've just got to find the right angle. We've got to get Oliver Stone and find the Zapruder footage, and then we'll finally be able to tell whether that ball was in or out. So, like, who cares?
My dude, there is nothing funnier than listening to a group of ex-footballers in a commentary box debating what technology could be introduced to solve this problem. Like Luke Hodge talking about pinhole cameras that have infrared technology. I'm like, when did you become an expert in this subject?
I mean, they all feel like they've come back from some high-tech conference in like Las Vegas, where they've been shown like, you know, tech from the future. Like they've had a sit down with Elon Musk and they're like, we'll do... I mean, chipping a ball, how many years have we been hearing about chipping a ball? Like, chipping a ball is the jet hovercraft, hoverboards that'll be flying us everywhere of the generation, because I reckon there's got to be 20 years we've been promised a chipping a ball.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Like, we like to unconsciously or subconsciously theme sort of like whole seasons as two guys, one cup. And I feel like this one, except the imperfections, is going to be – that's going to be the through line for this entire season, because you are 100% correct. I am not enjoying the games as much as I normally do because of this like fanatical attempt to kind of
getting bogged down in detail.
Did he mark it over the line? Did he carry it over the line? Like, part of the fun is gone now.
Like, you're like people going to a comedian show and going, did that all really happen?
Yeah.
No, it didn't all really happen. I made some of it up for entertainment's sake.
Well, let's go back to the Gabba on Thursday, and it feels like an eternity ago. The Lions are 0-3. Pies finally get on the board. There was a brilliant moment in the commentary where BT was talking about what was at stake, and then in trying to explain what was at stake, got so confused because he's like, if the Pies lose today, they're 0-4. But if the Lions lose, they're 0-3. They're still one game behind, but still like it's kind of a bad situation as well. It's like, this is what we've been saying for three weeks. Is like, we can't possibly ascertain what is going on when there haven't been an even amount of games played.
I mean, look, I'm always a slow starter to the season. I think part of it because it clashes with a time in my year where I'm busy concentrating on other things. I think it's because I'm a cricket fan as well. Often cricket went really deep with the New Zealand tour into like, I just didn't feel like I had any breaks. So I've been like, it's a long season. I'm easing my way in. But I think part of that is definitely, it felt like the AFL was also easing itself in a little bit with the season. And it feels like it's all a real mess at the moment. And we're like, hey, you know what? Check back in around 5 and we'll have sorted all this shit out and you'll be able to actually know what's going on. The only upside now, I think, to it is the confusion that it's bringing to the commentary box, because I don't like the way that they have started this new season, but I like how confused it's made idiots in commentary boxes. So I've kind of come around to it again because I don't like it, but I like hearing like people like BT get really annoyed by it.
I think what I have taken a similar approach, but not because of hearing idiot commentators talk, but just because every year we get sucked into, you know, making these huge proclamations after 3 rounds of football. This team's gone, this team's great. And we all know it doesn't mean shit. So I'm holding fire until round 7. Like, a lot of Saints fans got in touch with me, were like, oh, can you believe like they lost to the Bombers, and you know, now we're 1-2, as we could have been 2-1. And it's just like, just relax, everyone, it's fine. The first 6 rounds Yeah, everyone relax.
This is the everyone relax here. Maybe that's if we're talking about what our theme is, maybe it's the fact that, you know, Two Guys, One Cup is back in everyone relax. But also we're trying to take that everyone relax attitude to the AFL in general, because the thing that I think is stopping us from enjoying the game, we have the best game in the world. And yeah. It's wonderful because of its idiosyncrasies and its imperfections, yeah. Right? They're the things that, like, we should be embracing and celebrating. And at the moment, they're the things that are, like, we're just spending too much time concentrating on, and it's draining all the joy from the game.
Yeah, well, speaking of relaxing, it seems that maybe the Lions did a bit too much relaxing in their off-season, because I'm not sure if you saw the story, Will, but there was a suggestion that a WhatsApp group, a private WhatsApp group amongst the Lions players got uploaded to the cloud and leaked to the partners of the players. Now, look, there's no need to sort of rake over or speculate about what happened in Vegas, because I believe whatever happens in Vegas normally stays in Vegas. Yeah. But what I thought was interesting was the CEO, Greg Swan, the chief executive, Greg Swan, his response to the allegations that this WhatsApp may have had something to do. I mean, I know he was trying to, like, do the right thing and defend his club, but just listen to this quote. So Swan emphatically shot down suggestions that the November trip was hampering the club on the field. If the question is there a split in the group? Well, no, there isn't, Swan told the Herald Sun. It's just bullshit. There's no split in the group. This was in November, by the way. That's not the reason we're going no good. And we're not horrible, by the way. It's just a few of our good blokes are out of form. We asked all the leaders today and they said, no, there's nothing in it in terms of the group being, the split being in the group. So let's just break this down for a second. Okay, so he's definitely saying it's not the WhatsApp group. That's the reason they're no good, which is a great way to kind of good encouragement to the players.
Well, he's only got two settings, good or no good.
Yeah.
And at the moment you are no good.
I mean, if you told me this had come from Tony Cochran, I would have been like, yeah, it's a perfect Tony Cochran quote. But this is a line I like. We're not horrible, by the way. It's just that a few of our good blokes are out of form. I mean, those other idiots, they're playing to the best of their abilities. Oh,
we've got an absolute couple of twerps.
Yeah, we've got some real spuds.
Out of their skins.
I mean, it does feel weird, doesn't it, though, that the Lions come from, well, a kick away from winning a grand final. And then within three rounds, and this is not me bloody going, writing them off or whatever, but it seems unusual you'd go from that to losing two games at home, where, like, the Gabba, there's probably no more intimidating a home ground than the Gabba.
I think that no one knows anything about anything.
Okay, let's wait till round seven.
Who knows why anything is happening? I think over the last few years, it has become increasingly difficult for the teams that played in the grand final to start the season in emphatic fashion. Like, I think the general rule seems to be that those teams that played deeper are coming back less prepared than the others, and that the AFL season becomes more and more taxing, and that it might just be as simple as that. I mean, they played a quarter against Carlton a couple of weeks ago that made them look like they were the best team that had ever played football.
I mean, they did look good in patches, but it's kind of, I mean, I think Greg Swan's right, actually. I think the problem is just their dud players are real duds.
Yeah, and a couple of their good blokes are just not playing that well.
I mean, poor old Eric Hipwood just could not hold a mark. And I'm a big defender of Cam Rayner as well, but maybe I'm starting to wonder that maybe Cam Rayner is just going to be what Cam Rayner is, like a guy who looks like he should be really good but only is occasionally very good.
I know, but, like, Isaac Heaney was also a bit like that. And there's other players that – and then they do get to that point where it just clicks or they get that. I mean, even in the early years, Christian Petrarca was a little bit like that. Yeah. And
Before he started his cooking show.
I mean, by the way, you got me onto that and now I can't stop watching his bloody little cooking show.
They're so – and they're good recipes, very simple, easy to make. Healthy, I assume, is an AFL footballer.
The other day I was watching him make a lasagna that he said he makes a whole batch for the week and then so he can take it to training and stuff. And now I just have this great image of him, like, running some sprints and then just chonking down on a lasagna.
Like a Garfield in a red and blue jumper. Hey, you're a Doggies fan.
I am.
Is Chris Hemsworth the Taylor Swift of the AFL?
What do you mean?
Well, every time he goes to a game, the camera just can't stop cutting to him in the stands.
Oh, well, I mean, he is. He feels in a way. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? I was going to say, is he the biggest like star who is like an AFL fan?
I'd say yes.
Eric Banner.
Not on the same level.
Just think,
in terms of like Eric Banner is now doing sort of indies and Australian films and stuff, whereas Hemsworth is still headlining like global mega films. But
what about Robbie Williams? Like, I mean, Robbie Williams hasn't come to a Carlton game, but is Robbie Williams is Chris Hemsworth a bigger star than Robbie Williams?
I think Hemsworth, yeah, because Hemsworth is international. He's an international brand. Robbie Williams is mainly Europe, UK and Australia. Okay. I don't think he has a much American cut through. Look, I'm not against it, but it was funny. Like, they kept cutting. Did you see that Dermy referred to him as Liam Hemsworth as well?
I mean, spot on as usual, Derm.
and the best part was he even struggled to get the Hemsworth part out. He wasn't even sure if the last name was right. He got the first name wrong and then was like, Hemsworth with a question mark?
You would have thought his work might have been right up Derm's alley too, I would have
You'd
thought.
You'd think but, so. Yeah. How do you feel about the Doggies? I mean, easy kill on the weekend.
Who knows? I mean, well, it wasn't for us last season when losing to them meant that we didn't make the finals. So that's true, I guess it was better than that. But, yeah, I think West Coast are no good. And so it's very hard to – it was good that Bont didn't have to, you know, play in the middle and, like, could have a, you know, weak forward line. And, look, everyone looked good. They did everything that they needed to do in that situation, but it's hard to tell.
I've been surprised, actually, the amount of messages we get or people wanting us to talk about how bad the Eagles are. Like, I can't work out if there's a sense of glee in this, like finally, you know, this powerhouse club is absolutely garbage, or if it's more just like shock that a team that could be.
I must admit that I have recently started to move into the, are they going to be really terrible again? Like, there was just a part of me that was like, surely they just can't be as bad as they were last season again this season, and they'll be at least slightly better, whereas there was no evidence of them being slightly better other than, like, Harley Reid had a couple of brilliant moments where you're like, oh, yeah, I mean, he's obviously going to be a very talented footballer, but he's
when
not
he comes
gonna
back
be...
to Victoria in about 3 years.
Exactly, yeah, whoever he's playing with. Hopefully the Bulldogs when Riley Sanders captains Tasmania. So I've got to think ahead on these things.
Yeah, but, yeah, totally.
They're a mile off West Coast, I would have thought.
Yeah, it's funny too because someone, a mate of mine who's only like a casual AFL fan was like, when did they win a grand final? What happened? And you sort of think back and I guess it would have been after 2018, they doubled down, they went after more flags, got Tim Kelly in, extended the contracts of McGovern and a bunch of other old guys. And when you live in, like I had this idea of Western Australian, Western Australians that, you know, it's God's country and like nothing ever goes, it never rains in WA, Will.
No.
So why would you plan for the future? Like
exactly.
It's going to be plenty of
It'll
everything.
Be great again
forever.
Tomorrow.
Just
forever.
Dig stuff out of the ground. Yeah. There'll be plenty more. We can sell it. We'll all drive BMWs. I can pay $40 for a Palmer at the pub. Why not?
Care.
There's plenty of cash.
$12 for a coffee. Bargain.
And it feels like the pinch that the rest of us are feeling, it's finally caught up with the Western Australians.
It's weird because I think there's got to be a point where, I mean, the pandemic seemed to have affected them, like, because it did affect Western Australia in such a substantial way because there was already that feeling of disassociation from the rest of the country. And then obviously what happened in the pandemic and then around the grand final and all those sort of things. But it just felt like at some stage, like, it just felt like, oh, yeah, West Coast aren't enjoying the pandemic, right? But they'll be fine again next year. And then the next year you were like, okay, well, they're now in a bit of a rebuild period, but, you know, they're retiring some champions and they'll, you know, get in some new blood and they'll be okay again next year. And then after a while you're like, I don't actually know if they are going to be okay. I think, what do they do? Like, can West Coast get priority picks? Like, that just seems...
That doesn't seem right.
That seems like Obama, you know, bailing out the banks, you know.
Yeah. It's like they don't really need it. They've got deep pockets.
Yeah.
But I guess it comes down to, like, the re-signing of Adam Simpson just symbolically feels like there was a unwillingness to change or ignorance about what was going on. Like, if they had sort of ended last year and said, look, that was unacceptable, for better or worse, we're bringing in new blood, new coach, new ideas, and they'd still been shit this year, you'd be like, okay,
new coach, new system, they're trying to learn new things. But because Adam Simpson's still there, and this is not to blame Adam Simpson, I don't think it's his fault, but just optics-wise, it's like, oh boy, like they've just cost themselves another year.
Oh, yeah. And after a while, like, I mean, I love Adam Simpson. Like, I think he's, you know, always seems comes across like a really, like, interesting, like, guy who is very passionate about football and has a good life philosophy and all these sort of things. But, I mean, after a while, you're the coach and they're no good. You know, there does come a point where regardless of whether it's your fault or not, it just, like, you need to move on.
Yeah.
Because something's not working.
Well, I wonder too, and Western Australian listeners, hit us up. Like, if you're an Eagles supporter and it's going to be another dud year and, you know, you don't have any surf holidays booked for this winter or anything like that, are you going to get behind the Dockers? Like, oh. is that just kind of sacrilege?
Fanciful or thinking. Do you think we live in a new era where people could just go, you know what, they're another West Australian team?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, how bitter is the rivalry? Because I've always sort of felt like it's that kind of Sydney-Melbourne rivalry where, like, Melbourne has an issue with Sydney, but Sydney people don't really think about Melbourne. Like, West Coast – Freo fans seem to have the chip on their shoulder about their big brother, but do West Coast fans even consider Freo? Would it be considered like a novelty? Like, oh, yeah, that's right, there's another team. Let's go for them, you know, while our boys take a couple of years to get together. We'll barrack for the purple ones. What are they called again?
You know what? That's
the Doctors.
That's what Freo should do. You know how every club has different rungs of memberships? You know, you can sign up your pet or your family or an interstate membership or any of those sort of things. They should have an Eagles package. Yeah. Are you an Eagles member who just wants to support a decent football team for a couple of years? Then we'll offer you 7 games or whatever.
I mean, I'm suddenly bullish on Freo again. I like what I see.
They look don't they?
The Crows, on the other hand, though, and this was my prediction a couple rounds ago that I said, I think the Crows of this year are going to be the Freo of last year.
You did say that. And it does feel like you were absolutely right about that.
They don't look any good. And it's so hard to wrap your head around, isn't it? Because it's like last year they were an umpiring decision away from
playing finals. And then they were meant to get this – yeah, great draw from the AFL where everything, like, you know, that was the thing we heard all off season was like, don't worry, Adelaide, the AFL is going to make it up to you. Everything's going to be fine. And now they're going into gather round pretty much like, you know, they might not have won a game, right?
Yeah. But like Tex Walker, who was an All-Australian last year, suddenly looks like, oh, he's too old for football. The game's gone past him. All these like young midfielders that we thought were going to be guns, it's like, oh, they're all one pace. Yep. They've got too many of the same kind of players. Like it's just football is fascinating. I don't understand how anyone can claim to be an expert because how can you know anything?
It's also one of those things where, you know, that Seinfeld episode where the woman was like a two-face, like she looked different in a different light. Like that's what I feel like AFL footballers are like most of the time. Most of them can, like, it's amazing the difference between them looking so highly skilled or a team playing in a way that looks so highly skilled to them being like however many percentage off that you need to be to just look like you've never played the game before. Like that. Sometimes I just like look at teams and think, oh, you're no good at all. And then you see them 2 weeks later and you're like, oh, you're the best at footy ever. Like what happened?
Yeah. Or it's sometimes within the same game, like the Saints and the Bombers, like first half was all St Kilda. They looked so good. They looked dominant. They were swarming. Mm. And then in the second half, it was like, oh, these guys can't play. I in the moment shifted from going, we could give top four a nudge. Yeah. And then by the end of the game, I'm going, we're just a bunch of kids. They're getting pushed around. We need another 2 or 3 years. Like, and that all happened within the space
one
of
game.
2 hours.
Yes.
Yeah. It was, and also like there's nothing worse than a slow car crash game where you're watching your team just get chipped and chipped because you know what's coming and you can't stop it and you just sit there. We lost, I think, 6 minutes to go, had led the entire game.
I know, but it's weird because you're like, why can't we stop it? We can all see this happening, right? Like we all know what is going on here. Why can't we do anything about it?
And Saints fans as well are particularly, because we are so starved of success, like the anger that followed, and we've seen this, we've read this book too many times, like we know how this goes, like the anger that was like spilling out online and people wanting, you know, this guy sacked and that, like people wanting to trade Mateus Philippou because he made an 18-year-old in his second year of football, took a shot at goal to try and win the game and missed when he could have centered it. Look, it wasn't guaranteed we could have won the game, but he made one mistake and it's like people are like, get rid of him. He's no good. The guy who was like was nominated for the Rising Star last year.
Yeah, I mean, that's yeah. You've just got to show them the everyone who thought that Patrick Cripps should get traded from Carlton during that season blogs of the same thing. Like, it's the overreact business. And I think now we're so fever pitch that I actually think maybe we've gone too far. Like, maybe this is an old person thing to say, but it feels like everything is constantly a massive overreaction to the point where nothing feels like there is no actual narrative. Like, what is the narrative of this season so far? Like, who's good? Like, what's the story so far? What's the big surprise?
Well, this is the thing, right? Like, prior to this round, you would have said Sydney are going to guaranteed to play grand final. No one can match their midfield. No one can match what they do. And you would have said the Tigers are in a rebuild. You know, the dynasty's over. And then it just takes one game. And it's like, well, I don't know anything about football. So I don't know what the narratives are. Well, you know what? Here's what the narrative is. Carlton are being far too humble and quiet for what's going on. Uh-huh. They're just sneaking around, banking wins. And we're so used to them being so like loud and obnoxious. I feel very, very uneasy with this new Carlton supporter base. These ones who are just like, shut up. We had another win. Just shut up.
Yeah.
Don't say anything. Like, there's no crowing online. It's just very, very measured. And I'm like, I don't like this.
I know. They're smart enough to stay out of other people's squabbles. Like, you know, Collingwood and Brisbane and all those teams have kind of been blowing up and doing their own things while Carlton have just been sneaking around, picking up wins.
That's right.
Getting Harry Mackay back on track. Like,
because they were burning their memberships last year and then they all got egg on their face with how they performed in the second half. And so this year they're like, well, let's not crow because it might fall away and we don't want to be made fun of. But I don't like it. Like, know your enemy. Have them out loud and proud. Yeah.
You want to see where they are.
Yeah, totally. 100%. And what they did to North was pretty frightening. Like, we all know North don't have a back line, and it turns out when you've got two power forwards, they're going to have a field day.
That is a problem.
A team like North. But I have a sense of unease, and I think it's because, you know, if Sydney are a glamour team, so they can't fly under the radar, but Carlton should be the same thing. They've got an enormous supporter base. Mm. They're a big four Vic club. They should be front and center like the Swans were for the first few weeks of the season. Yeah. But I don't know what's going on here. I don't know why the Herald Sun aren't putting them on the front page. And like, is there some shadow? You know what it is? Yeah. All those corrupt pricks.
That's
I bet they've paid people
conspiracy
off.
That's what I'm brown saying. Paper bags.
Brown paper bags. Like, tell them Junos just to keep it down. Yeah. Just like they're getting into SEN. They're buying them a new mixing desk at SEN. Don't talk about the Blues until they're guaranteed to make finals.
Suddenly Jared Waitley's got a gold microphone.
I mean, don't you reckon? It feels very un-Carlton-like the way they're behaving.
It feels like Carlton understand that this might be Carlton's to win this season. And if they can just keep their shit together and just like, you know, keep it all on track and not get distracted by anything, that they might actually be able to go the entire way through this entire competition, as long as nobody notices that they are trying to do that and points it out on a, it's like, loyally listen to podcasts.
Do you think then, like, if you're going to structure the perfect season for your club in terms of keeping, you know, your feet grounded and your supporters' feet grounded, that you want to kind of go like 3 losses, 1 win, 3 losses, 1 win, something like that, where you don't ever get like on an 8-12 game winning streak? Because then, as Lee Matthews once said, the longer you go on winning, the closer you are to a loss. Now, I don't know if that is accurate.
Not science, certainly.
But I do understand the sentiment of what he's saying. It's like the pressure builds.
It makes no sense. It absolutely makes no sense at all.
Don't you think?
No.
I can totally see the sense behind that. That the more you win, the higher the risk of your players getting complacent. Like, I think that's what happened with the Saints. I reckon we beat Collingwood. And we've got a very young team and a lot of players are like, oh, this is easy. You know, you just turn up and you just follow Russell's rules and you win the game. And then, no, it takes a bit more than that. They got to.
I mean, it seems like what you're saying makes sense. And yet I think if you went back over history, you would find mostly the teams that win the most games are the ones who also win the competition. So
I'm not saying, I'm saying you can win. All right, let me give you one more.
But I just
specific.
Feel like statistically, if you're saying like a streak is a problem to have, like statistically the teams that win enough games to like be the top teams must have gone on various, there is no way of winning not in a streak enough to like get into, do you understand what I mean?
No.
Like, so, well, say the season is like, how many games do we play now? How many rounds?
23?
Okay, so let's say 24, 20, whatever.
I don't know. Like, yeah.
All right.
Between 22 and 24.
So if you win half of those, that's not enough to make the finals. So you can't even win every second week and sneak your way into the finals, right? Like you actually have to go, like Adam Spencer will probably be yelling at me about what I'm trying to prove here. But like I just feel that like if you need to win more than half of the games, therefore you can't even just go one on, one off. At some stage, you're going to have to go on a streak during the season to even qualify for the finals.
25 games they're playing this year. Holy shit, I didn't even realize. I mean, I know it's been, people have talked about it, but I didn't pay any attention. So, yeah, okay. But so you don't think, all right, I'm looking at the rounds. Okay, so you win from opening, so you did what the Swans did. You win the opening round, first two games. So you win three, drop one.
Mm-hmm.
Win three, drop one. Win three, I'm just dragging my mouse across the rounds. Yeah. Win three, but, drop one.
But three's a streak, though. Like as we
that's below the threshold for pressure. Yes,
okay.
three and one.
So you're kind of doing this like it's a keto diet or something.
Or fasting.
Yeah, okay.
Like so, you win for 3 weeks, you lose. You've
got
diet
an
for
intermittent
one.
Winning strategy.
I like it.
Yes,
intermittent winning, because that way you don't ever get complacent, and your fans, that's half the,
you know what?
That's half the problem.
I've swung right around. I'm convinced. You've convinced me. We are two guys, one
cup. Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Speaking of the Swans, and look, we've retired a few segments from last year, including Braindwayne.
Hmm.
But I just couldn't let this go. And this is not a criticism of Dwayne, but let's just put it down to, I feel like it was early in the season. Just listen to his call of this Aaron Goulden goal.
It goes to Amati. Can't take the mark. Goulden takes him to goal school.
Did you catch that?
What did he say?
We'll play it again.
It goes to Amati. Can't take the mark. Goulden takes him to goal school.
Takes them to goal school. Now, technically a ghoul is some kind of monster or beast, so it doesn't really work. Unless they call him Ghoul, and I'm not sure. Is that his nickname, Errol Goulden?
I mean, I guess it could be. Ghoul?
The Ghoul? The Ghoul would be a good nickname for him.
I don't mind.
What was that awesome bit of commentary from Hutto where he's like, Collingwood closed like the Grim Reaper? I mean, that could be Ghoul, like...
Ghoulish.
Aaron Goulden, Ghoulish, yeah.
Yes.
A real ghoul, you media ghouls.
Yes.
Okay. That's it. Nothing
more
beyond that?
Nothing more.
Okay, good. Well, moving on. Port versus Melbourne. Great game. Match of the round, I believe. Well, let's just check what's going on. No, it still seems to be at three-quarter time in the Hawks and Cats. Unless the Hawks come back and kick 6 goals in the last quarter and win this game by whisker, I'm going to say that Melbourne versus Port was game of the round. But two things came out of this game for me. Max Gawn, what a captain. Like, just seems like such a good guy to have in your team. Reliable, tough. Do you remember in like opening round when we were saying, oh, the poor old Max Gorn's getting bashed up and he looks all tired and sore? Well, he proved us wrong. We went too early, which is the theme of this episode. Everyone goes too early about teams, about players. He looked awesome on the weekend.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, look, Max Gorn, remember when all Melbourne had to worry about was the fact that Max Gorn used to have a dart on the way to training? Yeah. And, like, that really, really were the good old days.
Yeah.
He's had a lot to deal with. And to be able to, like, I hear him front the media on the Marty Sheargold show quite a lot, and he handles it so well. And then to then go out on the field and also lead after the mess they made of that whole Brody Grundy thing last year is, yeah, I mean, Max is one of those guys where you're like, oh, fuck, man. Like, after you won the premiership, it should have been all just easy living. You're captain of the Melbourne Football Club. You've got the best team in the competition. It really felt like, oh, my God, these good days will never end. My life is sorted and it's going to be easy from now on. And then it's just been like a mess of shit that they have had to deal with. But he has just stood tall amongst it all.
Stood tall. I mean, is that like, did you mean to say that?
I mean,
yeah,
I got a little hutto there at the end, I will say. Didn't mean it. Just
It's funny though, because like watching that game, and there was a couple instances where like, oh, Port's just going to pull away here. You know, Connor Rosie like kicks an inspirational goal. It's their home ground. But Melbourne just have so many players that you forget about that are good, like Salem and Fritsch and Langdon, and they all pop up and they're all like goal kickers. They're all speedy. They're all really good. But then you put on top of that like Clayton Oliver and Christian Petrarca, like you should be lucky to have one of those, and they got two. It's kind of like the Dacos thing. It's not fair that you get to have two. I don't think it's fair. There's got to be some equalization process where someone comes in and says, Melbourne, you can have Petrarca or Oliver, but you can't have both.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, hang on. I think you should be able to have two, right?
Two what?
I think that problem is that they also have Viney and that they'd also had Brayshaw. Like, I mean, you know, it's like I think you should – every team should get two, but it feels like they've got five.
I mean, hang on one sec, Will. Sorry. I don't see. What do you want to say?
Dinner's almost ready.
Oh, I'm just getting told that dinner's almost ready.
Oh, great. All right.
Thank you. Thanks for letting me know. I'll be done soon. Bye-bye. Sorry. Let's go back. What was going on? So what was the point you were making about Petrarca and Oliver?
I mean, I don't know. Who cares? Dinner's almost ready, Charlie. So we better get on with it.
No, it's fine. We got time.
No. Oh, I think you should be able to get two guns. But after that, there should be a redistribution until everybody's got two guns. And as long as you then feel like everyone in the competition's got two guns, then that's fine.
Well, it's also what they are able to do in a game. Like they do similar things where they're explosive midfielders who can play inside, but when you need them on the outside to kick a goal, you can also do that as well. Like that's the thing that feels unfair. Like I guess the Bulldogs are a bit the same, but Bontempelli is so much better. Like you've got good midfielders, but then Bont is kind of the next level above that. And it sort of feels like, I heard, was it Kane Corns or someone on the weekend was saying, like, we have to get Bontempelli a Brownlow by the time he's retired. Like, it'll be one of the greatest, like, injustices ever if he finishes, like, the greatest Bulldog ever, just like a sublime midfielder, reinvented the role of the kind of ruck rover. If he doesn't finish with a Brownlow, then something is wrong. That's the real thing that's wrong with this competition. Well, not the umpiring. It's whether or not he gets a Brownlow.
Do you reckon we could get fake up something around this Lachie Neale thing, right? Like, say the Brisbane Lions have been overseas on their holiday. The WhatsApp group, you know, maybe we leak some image. Gets Lachie Neale disqualified from the Brownlow last year. Oh, no, because Bont still wouldn't have won that, would he, in the end? So, no. So that doesn't work. So,
oh, you wanted to give him like a Sam Mitchell Brownlow.
Yeah, that's right. I was well, if we're going to get him one, like, because, I mean, otherwise it's not like we can all just chip in and get him one. Like, the game at some point, and I think the way that his game is evolving even for the Bulldogs is such that he's just not going to play. We can't be a team that, I don't think that we can be a team that is like winning the grand final or like playing in the grand final if Bontempelli is also winning the Brownlow. Like, we need to play him in other places that aren't necessarily going to be the places that you would get the votes to win the Brownlow.
Can we take a leaf out of the Logie's book and have two Brownlows?
Oh, yeah.
One is decided by peers and one is decided by popular vote.
Yeah.
So the umpires, they get to decide one Brownlow, but then, you know, there's a number you can call to vote which player you want to win a Brownlow. I mean, Bailey Smith is winning it every year in a row for the next 4 years.
Yeah, Bailey Smith's won his 19th Brownlow. Phone.
Text in now, hashtag Bailey for Brownlow. I mean, that's what would happen, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it was just, they would, teenage girls would mobilize over which player was the hottest, and then they would end up winning a Brownlow.
Yeah. Suddenly there'd be a best kiss category.
Most kissable lips. there was one other thing I wanted to bring to your attention before we get to the mailbag. We've been big advocates for the Suns, like, really leaning into their Gold Coast image.
Yes.
You know, we want them to relocate to the Candy Mansion, just embrace everything that is life on the Gold Coast. So with that in mind, just take a look at this ad that they posted on their Instagram, this little promo video featuring a Lockie Weller and I'm assuming his wife or his partner and their kid. And just, I don't know, you tell me what you think. Well, watch this. So what we're getting is a very art house, Terrence Malick-esque montage of Lockie Weller in the garden with his kid, his wife walking around the display home. Now, I'm assuming that's one of their sponsors, clearly. It's a home, like, you know, Meriton or whoever sponsors the Gold Coast. But that is the opposite of what we're suggesting. Do that, but have Lockie Weller on Cavill Ave. He's fucking driving a convertible. He's got three of the meter maids in the back seat. He pulls up, he buys a bag of speed off a bikey, heads down to Surfers Paradise, gets into a fight.
Literally the way he was throwing his baby in the air with joy in this promo, he could be throwing like money in a club. Like, that's the same hand.
That's like making it rain.
Yeah, exactly. He was already doing it. That display home looked like the one that Nat Fyfe did his interview on AFL 360 from last year.
Do you think the AFL, maybe it's the same house where Essendon did their supplement program as well? Like, maybe the AFL just has a display home.
Be great for if everything they had that happens. A safe house. Like, yeah. With passports, clean urine, fingerprints.
Oh, we haven't even talked about the other big issue of last week, which was the idea that the AFL, what would you say? It's not a cover up because they came out and said, "Yeah, we do it," but it is a
"Yeah, we do it."
Yeah, we do. It was. Yeah. I mean, it was a very defiant Andrew Dillon.
Yeah, we do it, and we've always been doing it. And we thought you knew that we did it. So it's your
now
problem.
Now that was, I guess, is my question Was that the implication that it's like, oh, hey, it wasn't a secret, we just assumed everyone knew? Or was it like, no, this is player-patient confidentiality and, you know, we didn't feel like it was anyone's business but theirs?
It's all of those things.
Yeah.
That's what the actual truth is, right?
The fact that Mick Warner broke the story too, and Mick Warner, if you've read The Boys Club, you know he's got a real bee in his bonnet about the AFL. And he sees – talk about seeing conspiracy everywhere. Like, he wants to bring down the AFL more than any person I've ever read.
Yeah, no. He's got a lot of, like, in his basement, he's got a lot of pictures of Gil McLaughlin and Andrew Demetrio on some red string.
Yeah, that's right. He's got some axes. He's just grinding 24/7 down there.
So it's somewhere in between all the things you're talking about. I will tell you the truth in a way that nobody else will ever tell you the truth. Here it is.
All right, let's hear it.
The AFL mostly cares about the welfare of the players, and that's why this program is in place. But it's also obviously a PR thing, right? They can keep it away from game day, like, you know, so that they mitigate. They understand that there are going to be people who take drugs. If they stop people from taking drugs completely, the whole competition will shut down. They also know that within their very infrastructure, many of the people who are now running clubs, coaching clubs, working in the media, these sort of things, are people who have at some stage in their life transgressed, like, these sort of things. It's just a part of, you know, growing up in society. And these are, you know, rich young men who are out with, like, you know, in social situations with, you know, people from, like, the communities that we're from, like the arts community and stuff. We know what everybody is doing. And we would see footballers wander in and out of, you know, the places we were. And, like, be in those situations. A lot of those people then go into programs. Their lives aren't ruined by that, and they, you know, end up productive members of the AFL community. So it's clearly worked as a program. But is it a cover-up also for PR? Yes, of course, because they don't want it out there in the press how many players are doing drugs. But they're realistic about the fact that they don't think that they can really completely stop it. So they have a halfway position that both benefits the players and can be exploited, obviously, by some players who want to exploit it. But the payoff to that is that it's not out in the press and all over the place.
So what happens now with the classification of injuries on the injury list? Because anything that sounds vague now is going to become under immediate suspicion. Like any awareness, any kind of general soreness, anything that's not a very specific and, I guess, verifiable injury. If you haven't seen it happen in a game or footage from the training track where someone's like holding a hammy and all of a sudden that person's like, oh, you know, you're going to be suspicious now, right?
Yeah. So, well, I think what they need to do is I don't think they should go as blunt as saying out for drugs. But I think that
the problem was he was out for drugs and now he's out with drugs in his system.
So I think that they should say it's medical still, but it should be a side effect of the specific drug that they have in their system. So he's got a sniffle. You know, you can't go on the weekend, you know, feeling a bit paranoid, you know. He's out on the weekend because him and his mates are starting a small business. He's got a really strong idea. You know, just so not, we won't completely tip the hat, but we'll
give some clues.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's get to the mailbag. If you want to get in touch with us, you can. You can either send us an email from everyonerelax.co or you can get in contact with us, Two Guys, One Cup AFL on Instagram and Twitter. This came into us, Will, from Teddy. He's a listener in Hong Kong. I heard on the radio this week that Nathan Brown and Kane Corns are holding a charity boxing match this year during opening round. During opening round?
It's during gather round.
Gather round, yeah, that's right. Yeah. I have three quick questions for you. Number one, who do you think will win? Kane, I reckon. I don't know. Kane, I mean,
they're both
Kane's
been taking it.
Kane's still an athlete and he doesn't
both
drink.
Both been taking it seriously.
Right, okay.
They're both trained up for it. I think that the whole football world was on Brownie's side, and I think in the last moment there's been a bit of a swing the other way into people who have realised how funny it would be if Brownie lost to Kane Corns and had to, like, so I think some people have swung back the other way. I would have thought that like how real do you think it's going to be, I guess, is the question, right? Because if it's real – I've got to think that Kane Corns wins because Kane Corns is just a more determined person who would want to win. But if Kane Corns knows he's the sort of pantomime villain and wants – like what's good for Kane Corns' reputation, right? Like does he have more to lose if he's beaten or more to lose if he wins?
More to lose if he wins, I think, because that puts a bigger target on him. Because I guess you're right. Like Nathan Brown actually has the most to lose because if he loses to Kane Corns and he loses to, you know, the most like loathed media figure there is at the moment. So all the pressure is going to be on Nathan. I guess I try and equate it to what they were like as players. And you think of Nathan Brown as that sort of flashy, skillful, half forward. And then, you know, Kane being a bit more of a dour, tagger, run with player. And I think in the context of a boxing match, that makes Kane more like Rocky and Nathan more like Apollo Creed, right? You got the flashy big mouth and then you got the determined little nugget. So I think Kane's going to win that match.
I mean, I think that, yeah, I'd be interested to know how real it is.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think that in the public sense, like Nathan Brown is the fist of everybody in the public who's wanted to punch Kane Corns in the face, you know? Like he's got to have that like level of support. Like imagine the sort of person who's like, no, 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 I'm a real Kane Corns fan.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in Kane's corner.
I'm a cornhole. You know? Yeah. I'm horny for corny. Teddy's follow-up questions. Does Charlie want to volunteer to fight Kane Corns so he can get out of his head? No, I don't want to fight Kane Corns. I want to fight anyone. What do you think their WWE entrance style music will be? Let's see. Kane Corns would be something like he's got to play up to the villain, you know. So it's got to be like the Darth Vader entrance, like the Darth Vader march. something like ominous and villainous. And then Nathan Brown. Well, Nathan Brown's a, you know Nathan Brown better than me. He's a bulldog.
I mean, I think like this, you got to lean into, well, he works for like one of the betting agencies, betting companies, doesn't he? Like, you know, I think it's got to be all about the glamour and the money.
Oh,
and
here comes the money. Shane McMahon.
Right, or the other thing is he's got like, he's in the Power Shakers, you know, that sort of modern church thing. So maybe it could be a bit more in that sort of like.
Like a happy, clap happy, like a
revival, happy clappy sort of like Hillsong-y vibe. Like.
That'd be great. And then just get punched out in the first round. Brilliant. This is from Ben. Hey, Nick Larkey in the North Melbourne Carlton game, he played well. But he had a shocker as well. He decked Mitch the Mouth McGovern after Fred had been paid against him. Yeah, that was surprising. That looked like it was almost a dangerous tackle, the way he pulled, dragged him down. Then got taken down by Wiedering and other players for being a jerk. Then later gave away a free to Harry McKay in a ruck contest with a reverse cuddle. He had a slapped ass face all day, which I've never heard that saying before. Received plenty of advice from opposition and late was trying to reason with Mitch McGovern and Wiedering. I thought it was hilarious. He's a gun, 71 goals last year, and will pass 100 games this year, but he is a proper man-child. What do you reckon? I'd say most footballers would fall into that category, don't you think?
I mean, I think it's part of the, like, power forward – glamour forward, like, you know, they when things don't go wrong,
they get sucked in.
They take it personally.
Yeah.
They take everything really personally. When it's like, when it doesn't all go their way, the world feels very much against them. And I do love that he does have that kind of demeanor. And part of it is the way that he, like, you know, pushes his hair down, like, over his face. It's like a little kid who's like, he doesn't like getting his hair messed up. And every time somebody ruffles his hair, he, like, always puts it back down.
That's
again.
Right. Didn't he once adjust his hair before he took a mark? Like, he's running out and, like, he actually straightens it and then took the grab. This is from Andre. I'm not sure if you guys have talked about the word clunk on the pod before, referring to a big mark. It does not sound like a good word for this action. To me, clunk sounds like a big kick, i.e. he clunked it through from a long way out. Do you agree? No, I think clunk's great for a big mark. You clunk it in your hands. Clunk. It's the noise it makes when it's a solid one grabber.
I believe that I reckon the word clunk is such a great word that you could use it for both. Clunk. Like he clunked that one. Like you just go, man, he clunked that one down the field versus, oh, man, he really clunked that mark, right? Like I think you could use clunk on both occasions. I think it feels better for the mark. Like it feels like you could just go, oh, yeah, clunk that one. I would immediately think you're thinking about a mark. But if you, in context, if you gave me context clues, Charlie, you said the fullback has the ball, he's in the square, and he clunks it to the 50-meter line, I would assume from context clues that he kicked it. Yeah, that'd be fine.
Are there any words that, like, could be, like, could be used both ways? Like, is there in the AFL, like?
What do you mean?
I don't know. Like, could a mark, is there a word that describes both a mark and a kick? No. No, sorry, that went nowhere. I'm going to our Instagram, at Two Guys One Cup AFL on Instagram. Is money in the bank a reason not to give priority picks when it also determines AFL funding? I'm a sad West Coast fan asking this. Oh, this is very topical. We just brought this up earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck you. No priority picks for West Coast. You've had too much money for too long.
But could they buy some maybe?
Oh, that's like, a good idea.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, buy some priority picks off like North and need some. Oh, no, North actually are financially solvent. The Saints need cash. I think we've got a few second rounders or first or second rounders. We'll give you some, send us some cash our way. Get us out of our $10 million debt.
Well, that's what I mean. What if like they did some sort of thing where for every player, like because West Coast have all this money and some of the other teams aren't as financial. So the AFL offered like a sort of, it was like an incentive where, say, you bought a player for $500,000, the club also got an extra $500,000. It matched in value you got for your club for that player. And so West Coast could just go on a bit of a shopping spree where the clubs would also.
I think that's a great idea. Right? I like the idea of that because then it's like, and then it's not like a rich club raiding a poor club. It's like,
no,
quid pro quo. We get some cash and you get our priority picks.
Yes.
Is there something that. There's nothing like that, is there? There's, no. Because I'm just wondering, because that sounds it's like because logical.
It's because of the salary caps, right?
But yeah, right.
Like, we just have an exemption period for the sake of rebuilding West Coast because we don't think they should get straight priority picks, right?
Yeah, that's
but
right.
Even, like, it doesn't even have to be players. It can be literally the picks, right?
Yeah.
Everyone has their picks, but West Coast are just allowed to buy your pick from you rather than like trading for it or offering. They can just make you.
So what's a pick like, worth? So in the top 20, it's worth what, 250,000?
Okay, well say it was Harley. Okay, say like they didn't have Harley Reid, right?
Okay.
But it's the draft and Harley Reid's there and you know, you're St Kilda, right?
Yeah.
And you've got Harley Reid and West Coast go, we want pick number one and like what we want to do is just buy it from you.
Yeah.
We're going to offer you how much? $2 million.
I think base contract plus some kind of transfer fee. So what's base contract like? 150,000, 200,000, and then I reckon you double that.
Yeah.
And then because he's if it's top five, I reckon you add another on top of that. So we're getting up to like 500,000, and then as you go out of the top 10, you maybe it sort of gets less and less. So I reckon half a million for number one pick.
I don't reckon that's enough. I reckon
really.
Like I reckon $2 million.
$2 million.
Because if you're West Coast and you've got,
I guess
say,
it's an asset.
Say you're West Coast and you've got $10 million floating around that you could spend in a minute, right? You could buy the top five picks. Come in, just buy them.
Yeah.
Right?
Get a club out of the
hole. In fact, I don't think $2 million's enough because I actually think now that I do the math on that, that would be too hard for the rest of the competition.
No,
we say to West Coast, this is your situation. You can rebuild. You can keep doing what you're doing. And you can rebuild, or we're giving you a one-time offer, but it's going to cost you. If you want to get back into this game, you're going to have to pay a premium.
Yeah, we're going to win our beaks a little.
Pick one, $5 million. Pick two, $4 million. Pick three, $3 million. Like basically, and so what do you want? Yeah. If you're West Coast, what do? You just come in with like $20 million because they could raise $20 million to spend just on get picks.
Go to their coterie. Just get them to empty out their pockets. They've got like $20 million lying around for sure.
Or just random gems that they've got in their bags. Lumps of gold.
I think that's a great idea. I actually can't believe that's not already a rule. But I guess then it becomes like – how do you protect Collingwood coming in and just staying dominant forever like the, you know, Premier League?
No, this is a one-off for rebuilding West Coast. We believe that West Coast are so bad that, like, this is the only way to, like, fast-track them getting good again. But to do that, there's got to be a benefit for the rest of the competition, which is going to be this, like, $20 million pot that, like, each of the teams gets $1 million each out of, like, you know, at the end of the –
I'm all for that. All for that. With all the rest of the mail is all about West Coast. It's crazy. Okay. People just like they suck. They're embarrassing. If they had five Harley Reids, could they win a game? Look, I think we've talked
about
West Coast.
Well, I mean, under my new plan, you could have five Harley Reids.
This is interesting, though. Can we call podcast Mike to get his take on the Saints-Dons game? So why don't we finish and let's see if podcast Mike in his second year of footy. Come on, Mike. Gonna answer. Maybe he knows why we're calling. If there's voicemail, we'll leave a message. All right. What's he doing on an Easter Monday? Maybe he's watching the Cats and the Hawks.
I mean, he could also be spending time with family, you know, doing something that a normal person does on a long weekend. Okay. Could have been away.
I'm just checking in on the Hawks and the Cats. Still nothing happening.
Did the game resume or did they call it off?
Still going. Dermy looks like Dermy's doing a bit of stand up.
It's absolutely fine outside. They shouldn't have been playing this entire time.
All right. Oh, voice
hello?
Mike, Charlie and Will from the podcast Two Guys One Cup. How are you?
Oh, I saw your name come up on my phone. You are notoriously a pocket dialer.
Yeah, I am.
So I was like, Charlie's pocket dialer. I don't even know if I'm going to pick up, but here we are. Right.
Well, this is a listener request. They're desperate to know. Did you watch the Saints and the Dons on the weekend?
I'm going to be honest. I'm going to make a confession.
Go on.
Unfortunately, I've started off really slow with a big year of footy this year. I'm actually in a tipping comp, and I forgot to to tip the last 2 weeks, and my partner's also in it. She's coming third. I've just forgot to tip for the past 2 weeks. It's just, footy's really hard to be consistent with, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, try doing a weekly podcast. It sucks. How do you feel about the Dons this year? Did you go in with much optimism?
I'm actually feeling pretty good. Like, I think we've played pretty well. This is actually a big scoop for the pod.
Okay.
I'm surrounded by Carlton fans, and it's getting dangerously close to me changing to Carlton.
What?
And I know that sounds really bandwagony, but like my dad's Carlton, my partner's Carlton, a couple of my friends are Carlton. There's not much Essendon presence in my life. Carlton is feeling very viable, but I think I will stay as Bombers for the time being.
Okay. Wow. We discussed Blues fans earlier in the episode. We're saying how they're being uncharacteristically humble at the moment and keeping a lid on it. Is that the same amongst the Blues fans that surround you? Are they sort of just being, you know, just they don't want to kind of go too early? They're just being really like, keep a lid on it, keep a lid on it.
No, my experience with every Carlton fan in my life is like sheer arrogance and just like, my dad, every time I see him, he's like, you've got to change to Carlton. We're definitely going to win. Like, it's that, that confident about their performance.
I'm glad. I'm glad to hear that, because we were getting alarmed that the normal Carlton arrogance hasn't been on full display this year, and I was getting scared that something was happening, like maybe some kind of correspondence or corruption.
This is where it's happening, though, Charlie. It's happening on the ground in the WhatsApp groups, in the family organisations. They're recruiting, and we're not hearing about it. But suddenly a whistleblower comes on the podcast and tells us about how Carlton are out there in the community going, you can come over to us. It's going to be a pretty good time.
We're going to win the flag. Yeah. We're going to win the flag. So nothing's changed, Carlton. We knew it. We knew it. Well, if you do switch, Mike, can you call into the show? Can we document your transition from Essendon to Carlton? I'd love to hear how that goes and like how emotionally you feel about it and the change of like following a different team, if it affects you at all, if you feel any different about football.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I will call myself like a pseudo Carlton fan at this point, but like I will always be a Bombers man. If listeners remember the end of last year, I actually did a song. It was a parody of Elton John's Rocket Man. It was called Bombers Man. The whole purpose of that song was to reiterate my love of the Bombers. But there's just a bit of, there is Carlton blood in me. My dad's a Carlton supporter. It runs in my blood.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I understand. Sometimes you've got to just you've got to be the one who sits on the Iron Throne.
All right, Mike, we'll let you enjoy the rest of your Easter Monday, and we'll check in with you again and see your betrayal of the Bombers is going.
I mean, that is a good scoop. That's a great scoop at the end of the podcast.
See you, mate.
Mike's thinking about see you, mate. Jumping off board. I mean that is tough.
That's huge
news for Essendon too.
What
come on. Like are things that bad at Essendon? That is this how good things are at Carlton, or is this how bad things are at Essendon that Mike is willing to jump off? I mean, would Essendon describe this as not ideal?
Strong finish to the show. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can at Two Guys One Cup AFL Instagram and Twitter. You can find this show and all our shows in the Everyone Relax feed wherever you get your podcasts, or you can go to everyonerelax.co. Will, you're about to start doing shows at the Melbourne Comedy Festival.
I am indeed at the Comedy Theatre, comedy.com.au, but then Sydney, Brisbane, Perth, all over the place I will be doing the show, so come and see it. It'd be great.
And next week, very special episode. We're going to be doing a crossover with one of our favourite podcasts, The Footy, with Broden Kelly. So if you're fans of his or you're fans of ours, you're going to be in bloody hog heaven. Listen, that is not a comment on Broden or anyone involved in the show. I don't know why I said that, but it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to both be in Melbourne. It'll be in their studio, playing at their home ground. It's going to be an away game for the Two Guys, One Cup team.
I'd be nice to experience that level of facilities.
And professionalism.
You know what I mean? Like that, it will be like one of those little suburban clubs going to one of the big glamorous clubs and going, oh, my God, how good is this?
This is how you do things, right?
Oh my God. Great.
Yeah. All right, that's Two Guys, One Cup. Play on, not 15.
A ball.
did a shithouse if you think we're being insightful, clever or just well researched. We're here to say that's not the case. We'll just go out and wing it. We are two guys, one car.
Listener.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.